wonderful to be here, and I welcome everybody. And while I remember it, it's lovely to see kids here as well. And while I'm thinking about it, just because I know I'll forget, tomorrow you may not need to come to 11 in the morning. The reason I suggest that is because with the Druid Nidra, which is like a yoga, it's a lying down meditation, which the kids will probably find kind of boring, I would imagine. But who knows? That's an assumption. But that maybe frees your time up a little bit. So this is the sixth gathering that we've had. We've had sort of informal gatherings in a way in India. So about four times we've met in India various members of So you could say in a way it's our tenth, and in a way it's our sixth. And it feels really good to be gathering in this particular spot because we are so near one of the most beautiful and oldest sacred groves in Britain. And the sacred grove, we'll visit it later, it's very, very beautiful. The sacred grove is a symbol that is common to the Druid tradition and to the Dharmic traditions. It's a symbol, in fact, that you can see right the way across the Indo-European arc. You have the sacred groves of yews in Ireland and Britain, sacred to the Druids and the oaks, of course. Right away across to the sacred groves of Dodona, the oaks in classical Greece, the cedars of Lebanon in the Near East, right the way down to the sacred groves in India, some of which are under threat, and I think it would be a lovely project for us to do would be to work with some of the groups out in India who are trying to save the sacred groves. Why sacred groves? Why are they so important to Druids and to many spiritualities around the world? Because they are clearings in the forest which help us to connect to Mother Nature, to Mother Earth. And the trees themselves are beings who are constantly giving, constantly sacrificing themselves, if you like, giving of their energy, their light, their oxygen, and their fruits. And of course, in the Dharmic traditions, Mahavira, the Tirthankara of the Jain tradition, and Buddha, they both famously gained enlightenment under a tree, hinting at this connection between the tree and our spiritual lives. And so it's fantastic that we're here. And but it also symbolizes beautifully our guiding idea of a shared origin. You know, our slogan is one tree, many branches. And this offers a simple and natural way in which to express the idea that unity and diversity are inextricably connected. And now, the One Tree project has two aims. One aim is social and cultural, and the other aim is scholarly. And I think we've been successful with the social aim. We've been bringing people together as individuals and communities ever since we were formed in 2009. And I believe there's another initiative to stimulate that as well, which we're going to hear about later on in the morning. We haven't been so successful in our second aim of scholarly research, and even though we've talked about it at every gathering. So we've tried the stick approach, and it hasn't worked. So now we're going to try the carrot, which is we've decided that we can offer money, a scholarship of £1,000, to somebody who would like to do serious research into this field, and academic research. And so if this interests you, please contact us and we can take the discussion further, because there's a tremendous amount of material to be researched and discovered about it. But a key idea in Druidry is that the truth is often found through an exploration of three principles. This idea that we talk about in the Druids of triads, threefold principles, which avoids, when you talk about two principles, it's so easy for them to come into opposition and to be seen as fostering dualism. When you introduce a third principle, you get a kind of dynamism and an energy in it, and the possibility of synthesis. And so we have two aims, and so I'd like to suggest that actually we should have three aims. Now, when I think about this, I think this is either obvious or it's possibly controversial. I don't know. So I'm just going to throw this out as a suggestion to you, which is that behind our thirst for intellectual knowledge and for social and cultural exchanges, there exists a more fundamental aim, I believe, in our coming together. And that is a common quest for a shared spirituality, for a philosophy of life and a way of spiritual practice that draws on a common source and that we see reflected at one end of the Indo-European arc in the Dharmic traditions and at the other end in the Druid and Celtic traditions. By this, I'm not suggesting we abandon our allegiance to our current culture or spiritual or religious affiliation. Instead, I'm suggesting that the One Tree Project includes not just social and scholarly aims, but a spiritual one too. An openness to weaving together strands and sources of inspiration from East and West to make our own unique and personal synthesis that works for us, that inspires us. So that's why I say that it's obvious in the sense I think many of us are doing this already. Many of us will be people who are following Druid spirituality, but we also do yoga, or we love Buddhism, and we love Druidism, and we create our own personal synthesis. And it's really been the aim of people called universalists for millennia. In a sort of concrete form, I suppose you could say the theosophists, the universalists in the 19th century made that more conscious and deliberately made that a project. The Order of Bards, Ovates and Druids that I represent is openly and deliberately a universalist order. We don't stick to just a rigid and close definition of Celtic spirituality, but we're universalist. And so I don't think this is a provocative or controversial idea. And we're doing it already. But maybe by just articulating it, making it clear that we have this aim, this will help us and give us a trinity or a triad of goals and aims. And I think this universalist impulse, it reflects the spirit of our times, a period in our evolution where there's a call to move beyond sectarianism, beyond the rigidity of the established religions. I think that's what we're seeing in the world today, a really strange and kind of upsetting situation of where, on the one hand, some people are moving to becoming fundamentalists and closing down and separating off, you know, with colour, with race, with religion, and so on. But thank heavens, there's another movement which is towards inclusiveness, universality, recognising that we're all one people on one earth. Now, one might say that, well, that's all very well, but this is a bit of an impossible vision. How do you actually do this? This is what I suggest that we work on. And I came across a book the other day which is addressing precisely this kind of idea. It's very beautiful. It's called The Celtic School of Yoga, and Ashling, which is an Irish word for vision for the 21st century. And it was lovely to find it, to see that other people are working on this idea too, which is just great. It's full of the most beautiful pictures, and if I may just read to you just a little bit of it, just to give you a feel for it. Here, in particular, the authors Uma Dinsmore Tooley and Jack Harrison are talking about yoga and Celtic spirituality. They're talking about it in those terms. All yoga schools have a philosophical underpinning, and most today are based on the marvellous, tangled, deep spirituality of the Indian subcontinent. The myths and stories of Shiva, Shakti, Lakshmi and Krishna, and the philosophical reflections that we learn from the Vedas, Upanishads and Tantras give us the inspiration and structure within which to place our yoga practices. But fundamentally, these are not gods and goddesses living on some cloud or temple in Varanasi or Rishikesh. They are expressions of our human dreams, which themselves are expressions of divinity. And their function is to bring us back to our place as humans in the dance of the earth and the sun, to the dew-wet grass of the morning with the light on her face, and ultimately to let us know that we are a living part of this vital dance. What if we, as Westerners, do not have to look to India for inspiration? What if we realise that the gods and goddesses of the Celtic and pre-Celtic pantheon are still very much alive and active in Ireland and other parts of the Celtic world? What if we realise that in many cases the universal dreams which make up the foundation of our practice are variants of stories which have been with us all our lives? Even if we have never heard these stories, they have shaped the minds and hearts of our fathers and mothers. because they have lived within us and our parents and our parents' parents for so long, perhaps we feel their presence more closely and more intimately. This is a vision for a living yoga that seeks to bring rapture back into our lives, supported by the power we gain by owning our practice ourselves and by rooting this practice in our land. It is held by a questioning intelligence. Where does our yoga vision come from? Does it not arise in the West as much as in the East? Can our own stories not be as much a basis for a real living yoga as the stories we hear from the other side of the world? The bright vision is to create a balance which makes it possible to take our yoga back to our own roots and yet realize that it is this very activity which brings us closer to our brothers and sisters in India. They are not repositories of something for which we need to seek. They are us and we are them, and our stories and dreams are the same. Isn't that lovely? Isn't that lovely? And there's kind of food for thought there. Do we agree with him? Is he being fair? You know, what are the details? It goes on. I won't read more to you, but there's a facet. It carries on to look at precisely what the One Tree Gathering looks at and the One Tree Project looks at, which is the Indo-European connection. It talks about the images of Shiva on the Mohenjo-Daro tablets and Canonis on the Gundestrup cauldron, Newgrange, the Mahabharata stories about mead. A little detail, mead is our sacred drink in Druidry. And they talk about here the writings of the French philologist Dumézil, who suggests a connection between the Irish queen or goddess Medb and the beautiful Madhavi of the Indian epic story, the Mahabharata. She was the goddess of fertility and kingship, and is also associated with mead and intoxication. Madhu, is that right, in Sanskrit? Means honey or sweet drink. So all sorts of wonderful, lovely connections that we can explore together over this weekend and into the future. So thank you for listening.